didn't need to pray, and he'd pat me on the back when I would agree.
Hello, and welcome to the Hellbound Allie program. I'm Allie, and with me, as always, is the lovely Francois.
Yes.
My loving husband. And before we get started, I just wanted to say, come and visit our website at hellboundallie.com. And you can email us with any comments or questions at Allie@hellboundallie.com. And Allie, as always, is A-double-L-triple-E. And on the line with us again is our good friend Aaron Kinney. How are you, Aaron?
Doing really good.
And our special guest today is Mr. Ray Comfort. Hello, Ray.
Thank you for calling me a special guest. It makes me feel special.
Okay, well, Ray, if you don't already know, and I know most of our listeners do, is an evangelist from New Zealand, Christchurch, I believe, originally. And he heads up Living Waters Publications. He's paired up with the hunky Growing Pain star Kirk Cameron in the Way of the Master ministry, that's hot, and has written over 50 books, according to his Wikipedia article, and those books include God Doesn't Believe in Atheists, How to Bring Your Children to Christ and Keep Them There, and Hell's Best Kept Secret, which is another interesting sounding book. I think, what's the secret to Central Air, a great pizza place? Yes.
There's another book I've written called 101 Things Husbands Do to Annoy Their Wives.
Yes, I heard about that one too.
My wife helped me write it in 10 minutes.
That is, yeah, that's what I was going to say. That is such an easy...
I think a lot of us wives could probably put out a book like that.
Like, come on, that's too easy, right? Seriously.
Okay, well, I read the Wikipedia article, and according to the article, Ray, you're a born-again Christian, of course, but culturally, actually, you're Jewish.
Yeah.
So, did you break your mother's heart? Did you stab her through the heart when you left the religion?
No, not at all. She doesn't even... She only knows who Moses is.
Okay.
So she's not that Jewish. She's just Jewish by birth.
So it's just a culturally Jewish... So you guys didn't go to temple or anything like that?
No, not at all. I just had Methodist put on my birth certificate because my parents were afraid. There'd been another Holocaust. I was born after the Second World War. So there was nothing religious about it at all.
It was more of like a secularized kind of upbringing, and then you found Christ later on in life?
He found me. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he found you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Nothing religious at all about that upbringing.
And so you, the most recent book you said you had out was the one that was 101 Things That Husbands Do to Annoy Their Wives?
No, that's one I put out a while ago. The most recent one is called Evolution Versus Intelligent Design, and it's Letters to an Atheist. And I had a wonderful 3 or 4 months of writing back and forth to an atheist, and he puts his side up at my side, and we leave it up to the reader to make their
actually false Christians or not really Christians?
Well, I don't know what the standard is, but it's a lot of people do a lot of things to offend a lot of people in the name of Christianity. You can start the Christian Nazi Party if you want, and no one's going to stop you, and you're going to slur the name of Christianity. So there's a lot of dirty bathwater out there, and God knows those that love them, and there's a lot that don't. They are hypocrites, and it's horrible.
Interesting. So, not everyone that says they're a Christian or claims to be necessarily is, but also a good number of them are, right? So I guess it's kind of maybe a mixed bag, more or less.
Yeah, well, I think the percentage is much lower than anyone would estimate.
Oh, yeah. But, and there was also something else. One of the books you wrote was called, I believe, God Does Not Believe in Atheists, right?
Yeah.
So, do you come from the position that atheists don't really exist?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's kind of one of those things, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I imagine that the argument probably goes along the lines, like, everyone really, in their hearts, knows that God is real, right? And so when someone claims to be an atheist, they're lying, or either lying to themselves or the people that they claim that they profess their atheism to, right? Because deep down in their hearts, they supposedly know that God is real.
Well, there's two reasons okay. for that. One is that we all have a conscience, and the word conscience means with knowledge. Con is with, science is knowledge. So we're all born with this innate knowledge that tells us there's a God, but we deny it. We can not listen to our conscience if we so wish. And the second thing is there cannot be any such thing as an atheist, because for an atheist to be a genuine atheist, he must be omniscient. And by that I mean, if I said to you there's no diamonds in Missouri, okay, if I said there's no diamonds in Missouri, what do I need for that to be true? Well, I need to see what's on every hand in Missouri. I need to know what's in every rock and every riverbed, in every jewelry case, in every jewelry store. I need to have absolute omniscient knowledge to know there's no diamonds in Missouri.
Can I interrupt here? Because I know your argument. I've read it on answers.net.
Yeah.
And I understand the argument is for you to know that there's no God, you have to look everywhere in the universe, and since nobody knows everything, then how could you possibly know there isn't a God, right?
Yeah, well.
Well, okay, so doesn't that mean that there's no such thing as a monotheist? Because after all, I mean, you don't know everything, and how can you look all... I said, if you believe in one God, how do you know that there aren't other gods? Because after all, we're both atheists. We're both atheists. Well, okay, that's the thing. Let me finish my thoughts here, because...
Yeah, sure.
Like, okay, I feel like monotheists are very much like atheists, because we all don't believe in all gods except for one. So, I mean, if you're going to use the logic...
Zero.
If you're going to use the logic that if you can't know that there aren't other gods in the universe, it's really basically an argument saying that we have to believe in everything. Because obviously we don't know that anything that we possibly make up to believe in, you know, Rama or the sleeping giant Vishnu, how do we know that he doesn't exist
Santa
if we
Claus.
Haven't gone to Missouri and looked for the diamonds there, you know?
That's a real good question. Well, there's one way to find out. That's very subjective, but ask him.
Who do you know to ask? I mean, you can ask the one God you believe in, but how do you know that that you're not asking the wrong guy?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to explain it. Here's the promise. John 14:21, Jesus said, "He that has my commandments and keeps them, he that loves me will be loved of my Father, I will love him, and will reveal myself to him." So if you say to me, "How can I know if electricity is real? I can't hear it, see it, touch it, taste or smell it. So here's a fork, stick it up there."
Actually, electricity is very easy to detect.
Wait, Ray, I thought we weren't supposed to test God. What happened to that?
Oh, there's a difference between testing God and proving him. The Bible makes that very clear. In fact, God himself says, "Prove me now," says the Lord. So you can experience the power of God in your life if you're willing to do what he says. If you don't do what he says, you won't know he exists.
Hmm.
If you do what he says, he'll reveal himself to you, but this is the promise. If you seek me with your whole heart, you'll find me. If you don't come much humility. God resists the proud, he only gives grace to the humble. So there's the condition.
That's great, but basically you're telling me in order to believe in God, you have to believe in God, but I'm an atheist, so...
Yeah, but I'm not talking about believing in God. There's a difference. I believed in God before I was a Christian. I'm talking about coming to know God personally.
So you don't know that there are other gods. I mean, actually, in the Old Testament, it seems like he was referring to a lot of other gods and just saying, well, you shouldn't worship them. You know, I mean, a lot of ancient Jews were polytheists as well. I mean, we don't know that there are no leprechauns, but at least, you know, with leprechauns and diamonds in Missouri and gold in China, we know what we're looking for. We know what gold is, we know what Missouri is, we know what China is, we know what electricity is, we can feel electricity, you know, but we don't really know what God is. I mean, where do I look?
What is electricity? Electricity is a bunch of charged particles in the form of electrons that are moving between atoms, typically, like the electrons being passed through the copper molecules inside a copper wire.
So let's say I said I didn't believe in electricity because I've never seen it. What would you say to me?
Well, I would say there's other ways to detect it than just the visual senses.
So how do you detect electricity?
You can watch a lightning storm.
You can stick your finger in a light socket.
Touch your tongue to a 9-volt battery, and you can get the you can
rub a balloon on your hair.
Like a Tesla coil or a lightning bolt. But you can also feel it.
You can drag your feet across the carpet.
A 9-volt battery or something like that, you'll get that little shock.
Well, that's what I did 34 years ago. I touched my tongue to a 9-volt battery. I was converted by the
power. Did you actually touch your tongue to a 9-volt battery and then Jesus came?
No, I was using it as a metaphor.
But see, what did you do?
Exactly what happened. I was transformed. I experienced the power of God, made a new person. My sins were forgiven. And then those that don't believe in electricity and say, well, look, go and experience it yourself. It's the same with the power of God.
Okay, well, I mean, if you experience...
Question about...
Sorry.
Do you want to say something, Allie?
I was just saying if you experience Jesus, I mean, don't you have to kind of believe in Jesus, first of all? Because if you were born in India or something, you might have experienced the transforming power of Buddha.
That's true. I've just been to India and spoken to hundreds and hundreds of Indians that just love the Lord and they trusted Jesus. So,
or loved...
It doesn't matter where you're born.
Lord.
He's everywhere.
Praise the Lord.
Well, I have a question for you, Ray.
Sure.
The argument that you have that, you know, you can't logically claim you're an atheist because you have to have, you know, complete knowledge of the universe. I mean, would it be illogical on the same vein for me to say that Santa Claus doesn't exist, or maybe that pink space unicorns don't exist? Would you get on the same boat and say, well, Aaron, you know, you can't really say that Santa Claus or space unicorns don't exist, although we haven't seen them. You know, you don't have knowledge of everything anywhere. Should we be open by default to the possibility of all these things that we can think of existing in the universe just because we haven't been everywhere?
No, there's a huge difference. Firstly, creation testifies as a creator. You cannot have a creation without a creator.
Of course not. It's
so
creation.
What I'm talking about is not your belief in God. I'm talking about your eternal salvation. If you don't repent and trust in the Savior, God will give you justice on the day of judgment. So your eternal welfare depends on what you do and your obedience to God. Whether or not you believe in Santa Claus, it doesn't make any difference in your life at all. Or
Amen.
In Panther or whatever you're talking about. It doesn't make a difference. But your eternal salvation depends on what you do with God's provision for your forgiveness in Christ.
That's interesting because I was raised to believe that what you did had no bearing on it. It was depending on God's grace, whether you were part of the chosen group of people who...
Yeah, was that you were Jehovah's Witness or something?
No, I was Presbyterian. It's called Calvinism.
That's cool. That would be called hyper-Calvinism, but the Bible makes it clear, whosoever will may come. So you've got God's promise that it's not exclusive.
It seems that there's a lot of different interpretations, though. It's really, I mean, I understand about experiencing...
There's a real confused myth out there.
Yeah, really is, but, you know, it's
That's
not
so
just
true.
It's not just Calvinism versus, like, Pentecostals and stuff. It's also, you know, Buddhism and Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, if I read a Jack Chick tract, I, you know, he has a definite message for me. But, I mean, I could be a Scientologist. It just, it's a matter of what I want to believe. And for me, it's like, I'm not really concerned with an afterlife. I just,
You don't like living?
I love living. That's the thing. I mean, I feel like Christians
I don't.
Know,
but I love living.
I feel like Christians...
Don't you love your life?
Oh, yes.
Don't you ever think about death?
I love life, and I don't love death, because I can't... Okay, I'm sorry. Frank, did you have something to say?
Well, I absolutely agree with Ray, and I would like to ask you a profound philosophical question, if you don't mind. What was it like to work with Kirk Cameron?
I've worked with Kirk for about 4 years. We're on the phone daily. He comes over to our ministry once a week. We do a radio program together.
Wow.
We're very close friends, and he's genuine. He really is a nice guy, and there's nothing hypocritical about him, and I really appreciate his friendship.
Oh, I totally believe he is completely...
He
used to be an atheist, that's right. I remember watching one of the videos, and he talked about how he used to be an atheist, but then how old was he around when he found Christ?
I think he was 17 or something at the height of his career.
Yeah, okay.
You know what the revelation he had? His revelation was, whoop, what if I'm wrong? He loses everything, so he had the good sense to just
good old
think
wager.
About his own.
Yeah, that's the good old Pascal's wager. I think a lot of us have come across that one.
Well, I don't think Pascal should hold on to that and get the credit. It's just common sense.
Yeah.
So, Ray,
why give Pascal all the credit?
But then we've dealt with this one, so let's go ahead and...
So Ray...
Well, I had another question. I was kind of interested about like, categories.
Is this Aaron?
Yeah, this is Aaron.
Okay.
Yeah, about, like, categories and definitions, because, if we're going to agree that, you know, atheists don't really exist, or we'll just assume that, since atheists don't know everything in the universe, they can't really exist because they can't really make their claim and know it. And then you also said that, you know, some Christians, it might be less than half of them or more than half of them, some of them aren't really Christian, and some of them are. So for these people who claim to be atheists, but they're not really atheists, and these people that, the portions of Christians that claim to be Christian, but they're not really Christian, well, what are they? What ideological worldview or label do we assign them under? If an atheist isn't really an atheist, is he a Christian?
Or an agnostic. He doesn't
agnostic.
Know.
So agnostics can exist, but like an atheist can't exist.
Yeah, well, an agnostic is an atheist who's come to the realization he doesn't know everything, and he says, with the limited knowledge I have at present, I've come to the conclusion there's no God, but I really don't know because I don't know everything, which is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would still contend with him and say, you do know, you're like a man who's looking at a painting and saying, I don't know if there's a painter. Common sense tells you that a painting has to have a painter, a building has to have a builder, and a creation has to have a creator.
That's a very good point.
Would the Christians that claim to be Christian but aren't really, would they be labeled agnostics or like false Christians or?
They'd be called hypocrites or pretenders. Judas is one. Judas was one. He pretended really well for about 3.5 years. He fooled all the other disciples.
Bastard.
And there's a lot of people that go to church and their lives don't match what they profess.
Hmm. Only a Christian on Sunday kind of thing?
Yeah, and nobody likes that.
Oh, I agree with that. I feel like we're going really fast, but since we kind of have a short amount of time...
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about something that has been...
First of all, before we talk about that, I have a second philosophical question for
okay.
Ray.
Sure, Frank.
What do you think about coconuts?
I think they're wonderfully made. They're a hard shell drink, and you can eat the layer around the drink. It's incredible. This capsule can float in the ocean. It's heavy. It's preserved. The milk on the inside is good for you. It's good
truly a marvel of God's design.
Yeah, thank you. For the better.
So, what do you think? I mean, the banana thing has been going around the internet. I don't know if you know this.
Well, the banana thing is kind of tongue-in-cheek. No one should really take it too seriously.
Okay, so I just wanted to know, because there's been a lot of talk, even like Penn from Penn and Teller has talked about this, been a lot of talk about this, the banana thing, about how God made it so perfectly for humans, but the most logical argument I've heard and actually made myself was that God didn't make the banana. I mean, I really, because it's called horticulture. Man,
where did it come from?
Well, the banana originally, well, I don't know how originally it was, but the banana is
called
the plantain, before the plantain. The banana was kind of hard and not very tasty, and not what we have designed it to fit the hand better. You know, bananas are big and plump and sweet because
and
of what we have
tiny
done.
Lady fingers. I wouldn't let the banana thing worry you.
Well, I'm just saying that there are very few plants, and we argue with some environmentalists a lot who don't believe in bioengineered food, because most food that we eat, of course, is farmed and is done through horticulture, and we've engineered these fruits and vegetables to be more tasty to us. So actually, the banana seems to be not made by God at this point. It's more like, what came first, the banana or the hand? You know, man took the banana and made it better for man, rather than the other way around.
You've got that one. You can have the banana.
You know,
We win!
You're fabulous.
We won the banana.
Although, you know...
Because
you would think that Jesus would have been able to get his hands on a banana, you know, if it was poor Jesus. He never got to eat a banana, probably, you know, unless the Mormons are right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Boy, I'm glad we got to talk about this, Ray.
We
I can see you've lost a lot of sleep over the banana.
No. Really, we've enjoyed the banana.
I don't know how aware you are that the banana segment got really popular on the internet, especially in atheist circles too. And it was just a very interesting thing. So.
It has had a big spike in exposure recently.
No, but I think
I don't know what happened.
I think it was a very good thing to bring up, and it's a really interesting thing to discuss when we're talking about evolution and design. And it's a good thing that you brought it up.
And ladies and gentlemen, Ray Comfort has conceded on the Hell by Alley show. Ray Comfort has conceded the banana. Isn't that
But he will not concede the Coke can.
You know what I'd like to know?
Okay.
Almost everything that we have in nature's got a function. You know, you can use apple peels, orange peels, all these fruits. What does the banana peel do? Does anyone ever try? Has anyone ever tried to eat it?
Well, there's those that have tried to smoke it.
I tried that when I was 17, and it didn't work.
No, it doesn't. I tried that when I was 17.
I have seen monkeys eat entire bananas with the peel.
Well,
oh, really?
But that's about the only thing I've seen anymore.
No. I know.
The only thing I've seen banana peels do is get flipped on.
Yeah, it's for Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
to help aid your getaway when someone's shaking.
Yeah, right.
The banana was made.
What else would the banana peel be good for, though?
Well, I don't know, but someone should see if it's got any curative properties, because everything else in nature seems to have a real good purpose to it.
Well, I don't know if everything in nature...
Well, you know, everything in nature does have some kind of purpose, otherwise it wouldn't be...
Well, Aaron, now, nature is everything.
Peel, you can use that in a cake. If you ever squeeze an orange peel and lit a match, as you squeeze it, acid comes out and makes a flame. It's quite interesting.
Well, you use the zest for candy. candy and flavor. But I'm saying everything in nature is not that great. I mean, you know, we have the AIDS virus.
Yeah, but some of those purposes are bad. Like for example, scorpion venom has a pretty bad purpose. If you eat, I forget the name of that. Well, I mean, yeah, like hemlock. There's a lot of plants out there that if you eat, you'll die pretty quickly.
Right.
Like 98% or 95% of all the world's mushrooms are fatally poisonous.
Really?
Humans. Yeah, the vast majority of mushrooms are poisonous to humans. It's only a very few select species that we can eat safely, and those are the ones you find in the supermarket.
You know, this is a very interesting discussion, and we don't have very much more time, but I wanted to ask Ray, this is something I've tried to find out from old, you know, the Australian guy,
Ken Ham.
How come, you know, I assume you believe in original sin and the fall and Adam and Eve and stuff?
Yeah.
So how come, you know, how come all these animals have, like, well, how come lions have claws and how come scorpions have venom and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. What did Ken say about that?
Okay, Ken said that God put inside of their DNA a mechanism that would be released when Adam and Eve fell, meaning he knew they were going to fall, and so automatically the DNA is released, and eventually the lion would. I was just thinking that, you know, the lion lying with the lamb, the lion would in the garden would look a lot like a lamb because a lion without claws and teeth wouldn't really be a lion.
No, it wouldn't. I have no idea the answer to that question. No idea at all.
Okay, well, you have a right not to know everything, and obviously neither do we.
Well, we have about 1 or 2 minutes left here.
I can't believe that half hour went by so quickly.
Yeah.
Well, hey, can I mention our website?
Oh, absolutely.
On lovingwaters.com, there's a thing that says, are you a good person on it? That helps get the whole issue straightened. You do that good person test, it can be
real. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
That's too bad we didn't get to that.
Ray? Yeah. Ray, have you ever told the truth?
That's really well put.
No, go ahead and answer me. Have you ever told the truth? What does that make you?
It makes me a you guys are funny.
We got you, Ray.
I'm a truther, too. I've got to confess.
We're all truth tellers as well as liars.
We got you, Ray. We got you.
Good.
You are indeed.
So, yeah, livingwaters.com and also thewayofthemaster.com. Is that
yeah, that's another website. Kirk and I have got The Way of the Master, and then I've got livingwaters.com.
Great. Thank
you.
Everyone that's listening right now, go take that test at livingwaters.com and find out if you're a good person or not.
Well, yeah. I'd have to say I think Ray is a good person, no matter what our differences are, but he's very pleasant to talk to, and we're really glad that you took time out to talk to us amateurs. And
well, you're very kind. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
If I can send you anything on any books on the website, no charge, just let me know.
Right.
Send an email to ray@livingwaters.com. That's you three guys, not the website.
All right.
Email him, everyone.
The address.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you very much, Ray Comfort, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. And we will be back after our intermission, which is, could you give us a few words on that?
I'll do that in just a second.
All right, here we go.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come. Kaliman, kali mi banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Kaliman, kali mi banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Lip.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Is a day,
oh. Daylight come and me want go home.
Day, is a day, is a day, is a day.
Daylight come and me want go home.
A beautiful bunch, a ripe banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day, is a day, oh.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day, is a day, is a day, is a day.
Daylight come and me want.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day-o, day-o.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
Daylight come and me wanna go home.
Yeah, you knew what that was.
And we've claimed the banana for atheism, but for most
country.
Of all, for Hellbound Alley.
Exactly. It's ours, you can't take it away.
It's been a great day. But we must move on from our celebration and our eating of bananas.
And sure. Our good times.
Everyone, I want you all to go to the grocery store, get yourself some real man-made bananas and not those little, hard, seed-filled, God-made bananas.
Exactly.
And have yourself a banana split in honor
of us.
Us. And atheism's conquering of the seemingly inconquerable banana argument.
Yeah.
If any Christian tries to use it on you...
It's ours, bitch.
It's ours. So.
We own Zora's you. We own Zora's the fucking banana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're having banana cream pie later on, I think.
And talking about top banana, we go from the banana argument to the banana universe. We're going to talk to our physics correspondent, Edward Grieve. Ed, how you doing?
Pretty good. I actually just ate a banana myself before I came on the show. So.
There you go.
We should all eat a banana before listening
you're
to the show.
You're an example, a light beacon to us all. And, But how does the banana, how does the evolution of the banana fit in the block universe? we'll have to explain that one.
Yeah, I think I have to talk to a biologist on that one.
All right, Ed. Well, we're going to talk about the block universe, and this is a topic that has many ramifications. Just like a bunch of bananas. But, why don't we start by explaining what exactly is the block universe?
Okay, as everybody knows, you pretty much have three dimensions in space. You have,
yeah.
And, this is pretty standard fact, right?
I hope so.
You take one line and put another line perpendicular to it, you get, an area if you multiply their lengths together, and then you stick one up out of the page of paper you've got, and you multiply all three.
Exactly.
But what the Black universe does is basically it recognizes that time itself is actually a dimension in which you could take a perpendicular line, perpendicular to those three lines you've already got there, and that the universe actually has four dimensions, that time is a dimension. And particularly, the Black universe treats the three space we have plus the time dimension as a fixed block, as a fixed block of 4D space-time. And then, as you can maybe picture, or probably not, as I can't, people moving throughout our three-dimensional space, and things existing in our three-dimensional space,
yeah.
draw out heads through time as they travel in two-dimensional space. So instead of being this 3D blob, you're actually a 4D blob, and you're kind of smeared out through time. It's just unrecognizable, but it's actually happening.
But it is not against string theory. I mean, if there are more than if there are 10 or 11 dimensions, they're also part of the block.
Sure. Well, then it would just be a 10-dimensional block. But
right.
The difference is that there's only four really observable dimensions.
Right.
The other six would be really, really hard to detect.
Yeah. But they would be part of the model.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
So, within that block, then, every single being, every single existent, every single particle is represented by a path, correct?
Correct, yes.
You have a path in space-time that does not move.
Right. The path through space-time does not move. Now, in space, of course, things move. But in all of space-time, if you took up the line that the particle made through space-time, that line would be static.
Well, we see things moving because we have the illusion of time.
Exactly, right.
Which is created by our brains.
Right. Our brain sort of pieces together this the video tape that is filmed by our eyes and our senses.
Yeah. So the block universe is basically a way to visualize the entirety of space-time.
Right. A good way I usually try to visualize it is by imagining that there are only two spatial dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you can picture a third dimension as being time.
Right.
So if you allow things to move only back and forth on a sheet of paper, but that while they move back and forth, they always have to move off the sheet a little bit, you get this particle that is actually a line through your three-dimensional space, but only one particle at any given slice of the space-time block, if you will.
Exactly. And because you can, you only exist in one space at one time, the path is linear.
Well, not necessarily, but...
Well, I'm not saying it's a line, but I'm saying that it only goes through each... it's a line that doesn't backtrack, basically.
Right. It only goes forward to time, and that's one important thing.
Well, it doesn't go forward per se. It doesn't go. It doesn't move.
Right. But it's well defined in the sense that there's only one spatial value for any given time.
So would you say that the block universe is fully determined by the Big Bang? Because you know that some people argue about the quantum mechanics, quantum physics being an argument against this form of modelization.
Right. Well, there's a couple of different interpretations of quantum mechanics. It just so happens that the biggest one is the one that takes on this probabilistic interpretation,
mm-hmm.
where one might argue that things are not determined. But even in that case, the probabilities that are used in that quantum mechanical interpretation are indeed determined. The probabilities are determined. Personally, I like a different quantum mechanical interpretation called the Bohmian interpretation, where things are indeed deterministic, and it just works out because of the nature of quantum mechanics that while they are deterministic, they are
Okay. But do you think that they are calculable in theory?
No. And that, well, okay. I mean, personally, I don't know the answer to that, but that will be the only interpretation of the answer. In theory, they're uncalculable, but they are still determined. That is, a given particle has a precise position and a precise momentum at any given time. Whereas the standard quantum mechanical interpretation says, until you measure it, it has no position or momentum, which I think is preposterous, just given
the
nature of particles.
So they do have a finite quantity in that interpretation, it's just not knowable.
Correct.
Okay. Well, we're not really going to debate the issues of quantum physics on this show.
So if I don't know if I understand. Let me see if I can think of it in a way that everybody else would understand it. So the block universe.
This is a little harder than Ray Comfort.
Right. Well, the block universe. So the block universe is like a way of understanding the universe, including all the time in the universe.
Right. I mean, just think of a little portion of it from, you know, when you're born to when you die. The atoms that make you up follow their respective paths through the block universe, and
right.
You're sort of this this weird blobby shape.
Right, and all this stuff that made up all of my activities have always been there and will always be there, except...
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, that's... So how do you use... does it help you in... How does the block universe model, how is it used?
Well, what it's doing is actually, it sort of lends itself to relativity, which, of course, Einstein came up with. What you can do is find a fundamental principle that things which travel through space-time abide by. And the fundamental principle is that things travel along this certain type of line called the geodesic, which is not really important, it's just a physics term, a math term, but it's a physical principle, it's a physical law that things, that all particles travel along these lines, these specific types of lines, and they don't have to be straight, but they can be sort of curvy and whatnot, but the important thing is that those lines, the equations describing those lines are calculable, and what that means is, if you know the precise position of something, of a football, of whatever, you'll be able to calculate its path, and then you'll be able to predict where it's going to be. All you have to do is look and say, where is the path? That's where the object will be as it travels along that path.
Okay.
I'm not, I don't really understand this path thing.
As an example, just imagine that you have a one-dimensional space, where things can only move left and right.
Yeah.
Okay? And then time will be forward and backward. So as a thing moves left or right, it also moves forward,
mm-hmm.
presumably. It's
yeah.
just like an XY graph. You know, you might find it in the classroom geometry or something.
So like one dimension is really like two dimensions, and two dimensions is really like three dimensions.
Right. Well, however many spatial dimensions you have to just throw on one more time dimension.
Yeah.
But so it's just like a graph of some function that you have. Maybe you've seen it in a geometry class or pre-calculus class or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But you can find the equation of a line, and that's the important part. And because you know that the particle is represented in space at one point on that line, you'll be able to predict, if you give me a time, I'll be able to predict where that line will be. In other words, where that particle will be at that time in space.
Okay, so I guess that at this point we have to get into the question of free will, because we're talking about purely mechanistic change here. So what, I mean, some people do bring up free will as a problem of... purely mechanistic predictive models like the ones that you and I talk about. So perhaps we should broach that issue. What would you say to people who use free will as an objection?
Right. Well, I mean, I would first point out that it does seem that the physics behind this is true, relativity and whatnot.
Right.
Has been
terminology that I use to describe free will in terms of the Block universe is free will is a way by which our path in space-time can move differently than the path of other organisms. That is, if you take the organism as a whole, not as a component particles, but as a whole, and you look at what it does, what it's able to do, the varied ways it's able to move, you would observe that human beings and other organisms with more or less free will are able to adapt to all kinds of scenarios. They're able to exhibit a greater diversity of change in their
exactly.
Path.
And you can see them, I mean, just taking inanimate objects for starters, it's running through space-time. It's pretty much just a straight line. It doesn't do anything.
Well, if you look at an object, you would see that its change is strictly conforms to other changes. For example, a rock moves around because of the wind. You would observe that its particles just follow these constraints. So it's a very simple kind of change.
Right. And if you look at a simple organism, pick any simple organism you want, a dog or something, it's pretty much going to stay in one general area and not do too much. But humans have all kind of war lines, as they're called, through space-time.
It's interesting. I was just thinking of how this relates to the first half an hour of the program.
Is are there bananas in there?
No, there's no bananas, but I'm just saying that we have this determined point through where we're going to end up. But in Ray Comfort's world, you can actually change that through some kind of magical process. He's going against this very natural explanation.
I mean, the thing is, the Block universe is an inherently materialistic worldview. It's a part of a materialistic worldview. If you have a god, if you have any kind of supernatural intervention, you can have a Block universe.
Well, heaven is a different Block altogether. And according to the Bible, it's a Block anyway.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is Block universe is kind of an extension of the notion of natural law.
Yeah.
But if God exists,
you
can't have natural law. Because God created the universe.
It's more like a game.
The functioning of the universe becomes subjective.
It's more like a game of Stratego. It's not a Block. God's game is much more simplistic.
I suppose you could say that. It becomes more like some kind of
board game where
clay block.
Clay block.
Some kind of clay block that God can just warp around, you know. But
it's not even like Star Trek chess. It's more like regular chess.
But would you agree, Ed, that the notion of the Block universe is inherently materialistic?
Sure, yeah.
I think,
like I said, particles have these determined paths that they're going to follow.
Right.
And there's really no way to influence that. It's just the materials colliding and exchanging energy and stuff like that. There's inherently nothing, quote unquote, supernatural about it. So.
Exactly. I mean, it's like people really have problems. I think people really have problems understanding the concept of natural law, because I was debating this once on a blog, and I was talking about how regularity could not exist if God existed, because that would mean basically that, for example, the law of gravity. You know, you've got the law of gravity. You've got a specific equation describing it. Well, what does it mean for the law of gravity to be just due to regularity?
It can't.
Well, it would mean that at every fraction of second, it would mean that every fraction of second, each particle of matter somehow, however gravity works by gravitons or gravity waves or whatever, sends out the exact amount of gravity equals to its mass. every single fraction of a second.
Right.
I mean...
And in a universe where God decides to lift up donkeys, men, and create rainbows where there were no rainbows before and move giant rivers apart, then gravity doesn't really mean anything.
When we have an equation, it has to be a natural law. Because if it's not, it's completely absurd. I mean, we might as well say that God is going to fall from the sky and turn everyone into salt or whatever. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Why doesn't God? We fall might as from well
believe any. If I'm going to believe that the gravity is not a natural law, I might as well believe that leprechauns exist and that.
2 + 2 = 5. And
I mean, it's ridiculous. And so people were like, yeah, but God makes this regularity, but he can also change things. Which is like, people say, for example, that God changes things within natural law. But then what's the difference between that and the block universe? I mean, we observe the exact same thing, really. It doesn't. You don't need God at all to explain that. You can.
Yeah, I use that a lot, and it's kind of. I always say it's kind of funny because, you know, why are you throwing God in the mix when natural law explains it just perfectly, and according to you, God doesn't add anything. So, I always found that argument kind of funny.
Exactly. It's like God acts within natural law. Well, there's only one possible.
Because
outcome.
He wants to.
Well, right? It's like, well, I think people think maybe that. Saying that God acts within natural law implies that there's more than one possible outcome. Like, it could be that the wind blows different way and the rock goes in different directions.
Yeah, but God made natural law, so he chooses to abide by his own rules.
But it's not possible. It's not possible because of block universe. There's only
right.
one outcome. It's already determined.
Right.
So, Ed, would you say that... the block universe is fully determined by the Big Bang?
What? By the Big Bang?
Yes.
Yeah, sure, yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, as soon as, I mean, yeah, sure.
Okay. I'm glad that we're settled on that.
Or is the Big Bang determined by the block universe?
I'll have to think about that. Very good question. But, no, yeah. But, like I say, you know, you and I, and we're more of the objectivist type. We're more of the enlightenment types because we have unending optimism in the power of human reason and in the power of science. You know, we are very much throwbacks to the enlightenment. And it's true, you know, there isn't anyone who thinks like us anymore. You know, people are very pessimistic about science.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
And I think the notion of the block universe is fully inscribed in that kind of, in our way of thinking.
I met some guy just recently, a couple of weeks ago, who we got into a discussion about relativity, and he's telling me how he doesn't even believe that relativity is true. And it's like he doesn't know anything about science.
Wow.
He's just religious and...
Yeah, it's just been confirmed by, like, 60, 70 years of experiments.
Yeah, just about.
Sorry, but, yeah, I guess
it's... more than that. They put up I think it was 1917 or so.
Yeah. I guess it's not really true. Did he say that the ether existed?
I don't know. I didn't ask him about that, but I will next time.
You know that there are some people in the physics news groups who believe in the ether?
Really?
Isn't that hilarious?
And it's pretty funny.
That's just sad.
I know it's sad, and people keep arguing about with them. It's really sad. It's unbelievable what some people. I think some people are really unsettled by relativity. They'll try to do anything to. Actually, me and Ellie, that's one thing we found while doing in solidology is that there's a lot of crackpots who don't like relativity at all.
I think it's mostly due to just misconceptions about relativity because even when I first heard about it when I was younger. You know, I sort of had this idea that it meant that the universe was subjective, but that's not really the case at all.
Well,
you
know,
you just take the example of a guy dropping a ball from the window of a train.
Yeah.
To his perspective, it goes down straight, but to a guy standing outside, it makes an arc. And which one is true? They can't both be true. But yeah, they can both be true, and they are both true.
I was explaining basic high school science about gravity to some friends, and they were so upset by what I was saying that they thought it must be some kind of brand new crackpot scientist that came up with it, and I'm thinking, yeah, Einstein.
Well, we only have a minute left, but what I would say, Ed, is that...
Newton, I mean.
What I would say is that I think the problem with relativity, like many other things that people try to deny, is that it goes against our intuitive notion of the world.
Sure, yeah.
It's just
A lot of people are not willing to give that up.
It's just people starts with intuitive notions about the world that I think we gain when we're babies and children and that we're raised on. And then, you know, we get science telling us that our intuitive notion is superficial. And then our world, you know, changes. It's like, it's very unsettling,
I believe. We inherently believe that new things are being created every day as we experience them.
Yeah, and it's not just regular Joe's, though. Science is that way, too. And a lot of people thought Einstein was a crackpot when he first came out with his ideas.
All right, well, this is the end of the show.
Already.
Yep.
Why don't you give our coordinates?
Yeah, come visit us on our website. It's at hellboundalley.com. And you can email us with your congratulations at alley@hellboundalley.com. That's ALLEE.
Thank you very much, Ed, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It was nice as usual, very good. And on the live show tomorrow, we will have P.Z. Myers, author of the famous evolution blog Ferengula, and Aaron Kinney, again. And next week on the recorded show, we'll have Stefan Molyneux, Introduction to Mark and Anarchy. This should be a do not miss on your calendar. And that's it for the upcoming. So that's it for us.
Cool.
Goodbye, everyone.
See you next week.
See you next week. Raise his hands and ask us all to stand and sing. And then I don't know where I fell. And I don't know how long I prayed. But when God raised me from that little beach, I knew that Satan had lied to me. Satan lied to me. Satan lied to me. When he said he'd be my friend, all I'd ever need.